the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. God. And the topic for today is on teaching our children time management and how we can teach them this skill of time management. We start with a verse from the Epistle of James, chapter 4, verse 14. For what is your life? Is it even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away? And so this verse from the Epistle of James, kind of teaching us that our life here on this earth is fairly short, and it likens it to a vapor that is here for a while and then disappears. Since our life here on this earth is so short, we then ought to make the most of it. We don't have much time to waste, and therefore the importance of this topic of time management. Just to define time management, define as follows. Time management is an act or process of planning and exercising conscious control over the amount of time spent on specific activities, especially to increase effectiveness, efficiency, and productivity. And essentially, it's just being very aware of how we are spending our time so that we would use it in a more efficient and effective way. As adults, this is something we've kind of, some of us do better than others, but it's a life skill that we've learned along the way. But teaching this to children can be challenging, to be conscious of their time and what they're doing with their time. The issue of time management is becoming more of a problem now in today's society because of a few reasons. First of all, the expectations on our children now are much higher. Expectations from parents, expectations from the community that we are in, expectations and competition that is increased now in schools. So for example, in my time, it was very easy to come first in a class, whereas nowadays, everybody has tutoring, and everybody is academic, and all the Asians have flooded the system. And so it's much difficult to compete. So that pressure on our children, whether it comes from parents or the community or the competition that exists on the kids, is making the importance of how they use their time more of an issue for them. The other issue that they're facing now is the amount of distractions that these children are facing. All technology is distracting them, whether it be computer games, whether it be the internet or iPads or the phones. All of our children are extremely distracted. It's much more stimulating to look at a screen. It's much more stimulating and exciting to watch a video than to sit down and do some study, for example, or to do something effective with their time. So this is making the issue much more challenging. However, it is the responsibility of us as parents to teach our children and enable our children how to manage their time and what to do with their time and how to eliminate these distractions that are around them. So it's not something that we just leave to the children and that's it. No, it's our responsibility as parents to pass on this life skill and to teach them of how to manage their time. It is a skill that is even looked for when you're hiring somebody. I remember when I had finished university and I was applying for graduate jobs with companies. The company that I ended up working for, they had an assessment day. And in this assessment day, they would give you lots of activities in groups to work on, and the markers would sit around and watch you interacting with the group and what you're doing with this group to make sure that they have certain things they're looking for. Someone had told me before this assessment day that one of the activities is they give you too much to do and they give you 5 minutes to do it. And so what they're looking for is somebody in the group who would understand the concept of time. So remind the group, guys, we have 4 minutes left and we have this many activities. How about we separate? How about if each of us, if we just separate and we get it all done, we have 4 minutes. And then, oh guys, there's 3 minutes now. 2 minutes, 1, 30 seconds. And someone had given me that tip beforehand. And so on the assessment day, I started doing all these halakot and 5 minutes, guys, 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left. And that's exactly what they're looking for. They're looking for the skill and the talent of time management. So it's something that's important for our children to spend their time doing the right things, and also for life. For the rest of their life, this will be a skill that will be extremely important for them. A recent study highlights that if given the chance, the top two pieces of advice that post-secondary students would give their younger peers is to learn how to better manage their time and improve self-discipline. It's something that everybody sort of wishes they can do and be better. So what I want to cover today is five points and five areas that will help us enable our children to learn this talent and skill of time management. The first one is creating an environment conducive to effectiveness. The second is setting goals and priorities. Third, assess how time is currently being spent. Four, plan activities aligned to those priorities. And five, incentives to modify behavior to ensure compliance with the time related requirements. So we'll go through each one of those, but this is just a bit of a framework on time management and how we can help our kids with each one of these points. The first one is creating an environment for our children that will allow them to focus. A very common and simple mistake that sometimes we make is we allow our children to function in a disorganized environment. For example, let's say their room is extremely messy, and you say to them, go sit down and study. And they go to their room and they find it's a big mess. And they can't concentrate. They can't focus because the environment around them is not helping them. And they can't identify why they are unable to focus, but it's the environment. But imagine their room is perfectly tidy and perfectly clean, and their desk space is wide open. Things are stacked nicely and neatly. It helps to focus the mind. And so the environment is important. Not only just the neatness and tidiness, but also the temperature. If the house is too hot, they're not going to be able to study. If the house is too cold, they're not going to be able to study. So having the right temperature, condition, environment for the children will allow them to concentrate, to focus. Also sounds. Sometimes kids come and say, you know, I can't do anything because my younger brother is always screaming and crying and he's disturbing me and distracting me. And so as a parent, I need to provide that environment where, A, it's clean and tidy, the temperature is just right, and there is no distractions for them in terms of sound. It's peaceful, it's quiet, nobody's screaming, there's no kids running in and disturbing them. And we need to protect that environment for them to enable them to be effective and concentrate. This one is no problem for Egyptians, but make sure they're well fed together. They're not hungry, they're breasted properly. And so this is a simple one that sometimes we can forget and neglect, but before we try to teach them anything about managing their time, let's first ensure that the environment around them is just right. The second aspect of time management is being able to set goals and priorities. If the children don't have any understanding of what their goal is in life, then it's very difficult to manage your time accordingly. But if it's clear to them that they want to achieve a certain goal, whether it be academic or social or spiritual or sports related, having a goal then allows you to take a step back and then manage the time accordingly. The second is priorities. Being able to set priorities is the most essential aspect of time management. Because we can have, for example, in our day, 100 things that we can do. But what are the most important? What are the big things? What are the things that must be done? So being able to teach our children what are their goals and what are their priorities is an important part. So for example, we can work with them and discuss. Things, for example, is God and church, academic, sports, music, computer games. And we sit with the children and we write a physical list. And we say to them, these are all the areas of life. There is our prayer life and our spiritual life and going to church. There is school and my study. There's my friends. and my social life. There's my own enjoyment of games and things like that. There's my sports team that I play for. These are all the things you are involved in. And then you say to the children, let's list them now in order of what's the most important to you. What's your priority? What's the number one thing in your life? And of course, they have to say, God is number one. God and church is number one. Next, what's next in your list? They'll say maybe school and study. Okay, school and study. What's third in your list? And so on. And you list everything they do in their life in order of what's the most important, what's the least important. That in itself is a very valuable tool for your children to learn how to do. Just to be able to list in order of what's most important to what's least important. After that is done, then you can assess current state. How is time being spent now? Like, if these are, we've listed the priorities in our life, then what are we doing now? What's the as-is state? Not what it should be, but what's the current state of our situation? Again, being able to assess time accurately is also a skill that is not easy to acquire. And so you can have some exercises with your kids to say, okay, let's say, for example, you love computer games. How much time do you think you spend on computer games every day? They're going to say, 30 minutes. You say, okay, no worries, let's write that down, 30 minutes. How long do you think you spend eating? 2 minutes. Okay, 2 minutes. And then once you've mapped down with them what their estimate of time is on each of their activities, then you say, now let's test it out. So start playing the game, and we mark the clock, and we time it. And you can do this over a number of days or even over a number of weeks. So for example, you say, they say, now just today was different. Okay, let's take an average. Let's take an average. Let's assess how much time you're spending on each of these activities. And let them tell you first how much time they think they are spending on it, and then compare it to what actually is happening. They will be shocked. They'll always think they're spending less time on certain things and more time on other things. So if they'll always underestimate time on games, they'll always overestimate time on study. So then having this exercise that you'll go through with them, and they track it down themselves and they write it down themselves. Say for example, they start time of game, 3:10 p.m. End time, when they finish, they have to come and write the end time. It's accumulated, added up for the whole day, and over a number of weeks, averaged out, you, Habibi, are spending 2 hours a day on games. That will really shock them, placing that amount of time on games. What then can happen is after you've done a sort of an as-is state of how time is being spent, then you can compare them to the priorities that they had set down previously. So the next thing is planning activities aligned to our priorities and save time on non-priorities. According to a study in Canada, 87% of students polled recognize that time management skills are critical, but 43% of students report a significant lack of confidence in doing that. So once they've now mapped out what's important, what's the priority for them in life, the next thing they've done is they've assessed, and you've assessed with them how they're currently spending their time, and then that you begin to plan with them how you can align the time that's spent with their priorities and with their goals. And they can be, for example, the routine things need to be aligned. So for example, you say, okay, you said that God is important. So how much time do we then offer in prayer and reading the Bible and going to church? You said that study was important. So should the study time be more than the games time, for example? And then you begin to plan with them how they spend their time accordingly to match their priorities and their goals. Once that is done, it's then important to have rules for them. All children function well with rules. Like, Once you've done this exercise with them, and it's been very open and collaborative, and they've told you what their priorities are, and they've told you how they're spending their time, once that's all done, then you put rules. You say, okay, how about now, you cannot play a game on the computer until you have finished your homework, for example. Until there are certain things that must be accomplished, which you said are very important, until all of these things are done, then you cannot play the game. And once you play the game, there is a limit. Say, for example, 15 minutes. That limit is based on the priorities that they mapped out themselves. Yeah? And then the rule is rule. They're hung up in the house, on the fridge, wherever you need to put it, and everyone has to stick to this rule. And no exceptions. Kids function well with strict rules. Never worry that my kids will be disappointed or upset or they're going to cry. Or once I've got the rule in place and it's agreed with them, then that's it. The rule is in place and I stick to it. Setting boundaries for them. You know, sometimes our kids want to spend their time differently, but they're too attracted to other things. So I need to, as a parent, help them set boundaries for themselves. The biggest issue, if we speak frankly, is time with screens. Computer, games, internet, pornography, anything to do with the screen, phones, is dangerous. So for example, I can have a rule in my house, no screens in room. Full stop. No screen, any screen, even a watch. No screen is allowed in the room. And even the parents stick to this rule. And there's a special table in the house that screens go on once we're going into our room. That's the rule of the house. What that will do then is help my child set boundaries for himself, so that when he does or she begins to study, they can actually study. There's no iPad that's next to them tempting them to look at. There's no phone that's tempting them to. And if the screen is required for their study, then there can be again another rule, a system, where once you need the screen for your study, then you come outside of the room and you look at it there, in the midst of the family. We need to put these things in place to protect our children, because it's too attractive and too exciting. Why would any kid leave the excitement of a computer to study? So it's up to us as parents to help them set those boundaries in place. That exercise of just getting them to put things away and sticking to rules is beneficial for them. The other thing with family activities is having the right tools in place for them. For example, a family calendar where it's up on the fridge, for example, like in that photo, or a certain spot in the house where events are put there. For example, assignment for maths is due this day, and it's put. Nina's assignment due. We have to go to James's birthday party, right? James's birthday party. Sports training on this night. And it's all there, and it's all seen. The kids know that this is our family calendar. Anything happens, they run and they put it into the family calendar. That way, when you're with your children, you look, you say, okay, Nina, you have next week your assignment due, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days left. Oh, but that day we have sports, and that day we have James's birthday. That means we only have really 3 days left for you to finish your assignment. So what can we do in those 3 days, and how would you split up that time accordingly in those 3 days so that you plan to finish your assignment on time? Yeah? The other thing is having clocks, watches, or timers for them. Special clocks, alarm clocks, to help them manage the time. Say, for example, they say, I want to do 1 hour of homework. So you have a special stopwatch. They press start and they begin to study. And as soon as it has 1 hour goes, then they can have their break, for example. That will also help when they come to assess the current as-is state of how they're spending their time. So having clocks and watches and alarm clocks, whatever they need to help them manage their time. The other idea is to-do lists, which a lot of us are familiar with. But the idea of teaching them how to have a to-do list, that they put down a list of what they want to achieve that particular day, and they tick it off as they go, and it's listed from most important to least important in order, so they don't spend too much time on tasks that are not really, really valuable. These are all things that will help our children manage their time. The last one is incentives. As you see them doing anything good, it's important that we praise and encourage and reward them. It's easier sometimes to criticize. It's easier to say you're hopeless and to fashion and hamar and temfahaga. And it's much easier to do that. It's harder to praise. But that is the most encouraging thing you can do. Is that anytime you see any good behavior, reward it. Well done, Habib. That was fantastic. You studied a whole hour and you weren't distracted by any screen, and I was so proud of you. And keep that up, it's excellent. You know, giving them the positive reinforcement is much stronger than putting them down. Putting them down does the opposite effect. Khalas, I'm stuffed, I'm done. My mirror told me I'm done. There's no point. There's no point. Let them always want to live up to a picture that you paint for them. Habib, you're so clever and you're so smart and so proud of you. These positive things will help the children. So in anything we want to teach our children, if we want to teach them, we give them positive reinforcement by words and by gifts. I'll tell you a story about my mum. When I was in school, mum had this system where if I came home with a good mark in anything, like in any exam or test, she had this thing where she'd say, "Ruha khud kul al-fulus min my wallet." Alright? So, whatever it was, right? And sometimes, back in those days, you never got, but she used to get paid in an envelope, and then she put it in her purse. So she may have received her week's pay, and if it was in her purse at that time, it was mine. So I would try so hard to get a good mark in a test, and come home and say, "Mum, I got 80%. Just get it. Yeah, she got paid that day, and I got like $500. I still remember it to this day of how much it drove me to do well in school, because I wanted all that money from her purse. And she wouldn't even check how much was in there first. It was like, and sometimes I would do very badly in an exam, and I'd say, "Mum, I got 60%. She's, "Rock, good, good, feel smart, that's excellent." I was like, "Oh, mad." And I'd go get all the money from the thing. But just the idea of an incentive that really pushed me and encouraged me to do well in these exams. We need to push our children and encourage them. So if we go just sort of in summary, the first thing was that we create the right environment for the children. So make sure everything's nice and lovely and tidy. There's a nice smell. Let's get those beautiful icons around. Everything's nice around them. Helps them to focus. Secondly, is that we do an exercise with them where we set our goals and priorities. What do you want to achieve in life? What do you want to aspire to? What rank do you want to be at school? How good do you want to be at your sports? What do you want to achieve with your friends? What are your goals in all these areas? And then what are the most important things to me? Then I assess how am I currently spending my time, how the kids currently spend their time. They will find for sure there is a mismatch between how they spend their time and what their goals and priorities are. Then I realign my time to my goals and priorities. And then finally, as you see them improving, you give them incentives by praise and by gifts. Any questions or comments to add to that? Or any experiences yet?
Just curious, what age is this?
Yeah.
It's quite a lot.
Yeah.
Look, I think this probably would start from school age, you know, from kindergarten, where the idea of homework comes in, and they want to play and they want to do things. And so I think at that point in time, I mean, it won't be as sophisticated of goals and priorities, but the idea that managing the time that they have, you know, you're going to go to bed at 7 p.m. and now we get home from school at 3:30. That gives us 4 hours, and then maybe we do 1 hour homework, 1 hour whatever, 1 hour. ideal to get them thinking about that, I think, in kindergarten. I'm sure a lot of you have good experiences with this. Like, I'm speaking theoretically, I don't actually have any older kids, but you know, some of you that may have, please share with us, like, do you have any ideas that have worked for you that you can share with the rest of them? I think that will be good. So do they stick it on the day once they've done it, or? So what you're saying is that an idea where you have a weekly calendar up on the fridge, anywhere in the house, and there is little like stickers of tasks that need to be achieved. For example, homework, eating, playing, and then they take it and stick it on the day that they wanted to get these things done once they get home from school. So a practical way of them understanding that in this amount of time I have to get these things done. What if it's continuously low marks? How can I praise the results in that case? Well, I think then it's important to look to the root cause of why these low marks are coming, and maybe that is that they are unable to focus or unable to work and to study and to concentrate. So then I would go back to reward the root causes. So for example, if I find them one day, they are doing well and they are studying, then I praise and I reward and I gift, and so I encourage that behaviour to grow, which will then affect the marks in the end. So although I can't reward the bad mark in the end, the outcome, but I can reward the process to get to that point, which is doing the homework or studying or these sorts of things.
So it's all about rewards, nothing about punishment? Or
of course there is place, don't get me wrong, of course there is place for punishment, but I think we have to be very careful about punishing achievements. Like, we can punish bad behaviour. Like, for example, we can punish a kid who swears, or a kid who speaks rudely, or all those wrong behaviours. Of course, there has to be punishment to discipline the children, but it becomes sensitive when it's about achievement, because that then affects their self-confidence. Like, we have to understand that all kids are not equal, and some kids are unable to achieve certain results. So if from a young age our children are exposed to you're dumb, you're hopeless, you're bad, you're not like the others, that will start to destroy their self-confidence, which we don't want to do, of course. So I think when it comes to achievements, especially academic and social, there needs to be more of a reward system, whereas other things, of course, punishment needs to take place. But I say that just from my experience with the children in confession. A lot of them come feeling very down, and when I sort of dig a little bit deeper, I find that, you know, a lot of them say comments, for example, that my parents think I'm dumb, or they always say, and they compare me. Just last week a kid came and saying that my mum always compares me to another relative, and every time I hate when she compares me. I don't know why she compares me. So we may do it casually, but for them that hurts. That hurts them. So I think it's important that we be sensitive in that area, that we boost their confidence. Because once you're self-confident, you think you can achieve anything, you know, and they go after it. So.
Things and Legos, and I got a lot of Legos and stuff trying to get them out of the screens. Yeah.
question is that once the child finishes homework, they say they're bored and they want to spend time on screens, and any other alternative seems, you know, boring compared to. It's very true that everything's boring compared to screens, and that's the problem, that's the challenge that we have. And everything's boring compared to pornography, for example. And it's much, much more enjoyable to watch pornography than to do a puzzle. So we're dealing with very difficult times. I'll tell you again, if I use my mum as an example, my mum had a rule in the house that I was not allowed to use the word bored. It was like a swear word. I wasn't allowed to say bored. So if I said, I'm bored, I would be in very big trouble. And she would make me get a paper. So if I slipped and said, oh, I'm so bored, she'd just get a paper, get a pen, and I'd have to write down 20 things that I could do with my time when I'm bored. And then you start working through that list. Start number one, and then finish the 20 things. And so I'd be forced to get paper and think and write, what can I do? I don't know, clean my room, play with my brother soccer, help mum do the dishes, whatever. I had to make 20 things up. And she's okay, start. So I've harumped, I never say I'm bored ever again in my life. But I think the idea that we say to them, running to screens is not a solution to boredom. That I have to think of what other activities do I do, because that then fosters within them good hobbies to do, whether it be sports or whether it be something around the house or any activity. But avoid screens. I know it's hard because that's all they want. But there needs to be a time limit. So okay, you can spend this much time on the game or on the screen, and that has to be in front of us, can't be in your room by yourself. And then you need to find other activities to do. And maybe that exercise of listing, what could I do in my time, may be beneficial.
That's a similar question like this one. Another simple question. Anything exciting you make except to study. I'm working on a couple, but he said, I just want to come back from school, and I want to do my homework. And if I force to do my homework,
so the question is, what if the child is doesn't want to do any homework, doesn't do any study, and would rather just sit there and do nothing compared to doing some study or some homework? I think you know, with this situation, it's important to let the child feel that they are good at it. Because, you know, naturally as us, as even adults, we always gravitate towards things that we're good at, and we move away from things that we're not good at. It's natural. If I'm good at soccer, then I want to play more soccer all the time. I never want to play basketball if I'm not good at basketball, and I shy away from basketball. So it may be a situation where children are not feeling they're clever academically, not feeling they're good at doing their homework, and they're always getting it wrong, and they don't know what to do, and it makes them feel down, so they shy away from it. So I think if we can start to foster within them very slowly, very gradually, that actually just 10 minutes, and you sit with them, and then, oh, look how good you were, you did excellent, that's fantastic. And
you think you're not good enough, you need to do more. My goodness, whatever.
Yeah. We're saying the opposite case where the child thinks they know it all and they don't need to study. Maybe you give them some hard questions to realise that they're not that clever. But yeah, I guess it's a balance.
But
yeah.
What do you have to keep ourselves away from this so we can feel the frustration of peace? That's what part of it so we can do, we can discuss, we can't have to same thing is wrong with becomes wrong with the basic way the last question to feel the example of dog and it's not right to them they feel the stupid.
Yeah. That is a very important point that they raise, which is that they need to see in us as parents how we are spending time with the screens and how we are managing our time. Because it's very easy while we're on our phone, flicking through Facebook, to say, get off your screen, happy being in English. So that, I mean, they all of a sudden don't get what we're saying. But if they see in us, and that's why I said when we say a rule, like no screens in room, even the parents stick to that rule. And they see in us that we are very organized with our time. They see in us that we are very selective of the time with the computer or with the phone. And then they will respond to that. And that's a principle for all parenting, actually. That if I want to give anything, I need to have that model as an example. Like prayer. I can never tell my kids go pray, and I don't pray. They'll feel it, they'll see it, they'll ring straight through us. Anything I'll teach my kids, I should sort of acquire it and do it real well, let them see that as a model. Yeah. Thank you very much, and we'll stand up and do the prayer. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for this chance to stand before you and together in your house.